Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The fly ball hit pretty deep to left field. Back is Eibner. He's out of room, and it is. I lost it. It's gone. Just did clear the wall, and Tyler Naquin has gone oppo for the Indians' second home run of the day. His 11th home run on the year. Naquin rips it down the right field line. That'll go into the corner. Chisenhall scores. Rajay Davis rolls around third. He'll score two. Naquin stops at second base with a two-out, two-run double to make it a 4-0 Indians lead.
All right.
And now Naquin sends another drive. Deep center. Dyson is back. He's looking up, and that's long gone.
Wow.
Holy mackerel. Off the batter's eye backdrop in dead central. And Tyler Naquin has a two-homer game. And that was an absolute rocket shot to straightaway center. He's driven in six runs in the ballgame.
Kinsler, Maben, Cabrera to face him in the first. There's a swing and a fly ball left field off the bat of Kinsler. Watch it fly. Gone. 1-1 tie in the first. K-Rod's trying to make it a 1-2-3 ninth in a 1-1 game. The 3-2 pitch. Swinging a drive to right field. Way back in right and gone.
Change up.
Max Kepler absolutely crushes the 3-2 into the right field seats, and the Twins take a 2-1 lead.
It was a changeup in his happy zone.
Strike one pitch, swinging a high fly ball way back in right center, and that ball is gone.
Yikes.
Rosario crushes the 2-run home.
Should have taken him out.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Should have taken him out. Those are the words that have been ringing in my head, at least, ever since yesterday when that game ended. Should have taken him out. That's, of course, in reference to K-Rod of the Tigers. Welcome into this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Kuslin and Bob France is out today. I got Chris Lemieux hanging out with me, too. And we're going to have fun over the course of the next, not two, but 3 hours, because as you guys know, I've been in for Mike Miller on drive time all week. So it is I, Kuslin, for the next couple of hours, and we're going to have some fun with a lot of random fun topics. A lot of them are going to be baseball-centric, up to and including this time, he is assures me there's nothing that'll come up this time as did yesterday. Anthony Fenech, beat writer for the Tigers for the Detroit Free Press. He's in Chicago as the Tigers get ready for their four-game series starting tonight against the White Sox. So he will join us at 3:35. Otherwise, it's open phones, people, for the duration of the next couple of hours at 866-240-1065. As is the case with me, anything and everything is pretty much fair game. But there's a couple of topics we're definitely going to go over. And like I said, they're going to be baseball-centric. And by baseball-centric, I mean you have the various trade rumors that are out there, of course, and we're going to dive into where we stand at that, because that should be, at this time of year, one of the bigger stories in sports right now is what might happen with contenders at the deadline, and especially in this area, because you got the Indians, and then you got the Tigers trying to figure out what they may be doing. So we're going to dive into where the latest rumors are. There are somebody kicked off the trades yesterday. The Cubs picked up Mike Montgomery, one-time Royals prospect, now Mariners reliever, picked him up for their bullpen, did the Cubs, and they sent away their best hitting prospect in order to get him. So the die has been cast, if you will, by a contender trying to make some moves happen. We're also going to talk about we went over this with the NFL the other day, because ESPN had their little article out there about ways to change the NFL. It was a great conversation, great fun. And Well, at the same time, they had a side subject about some ways to improve baseball. I have the list from ESPN's Buster Olney. They were talking with it on Mike and Mike the other day. And we're going to dive into the baseball version of that same conversation, some things you would change about baseball to improve the game. Also, and this came up in that nine ways, but I got some thoughts on Robert Manfred, baseball's commissioner. He was talking to Mike and Mike this morning, and I'll play that clip for you here in a moment. Basically, they're talking about changing reliever rules. Huh? What? Reliever rules? What are you talking about? Well, we'll play it for you here in just a little bit and get you ready for that. Also, I want to touch on this for you Browns and Lions fans, especially on the Browns side of things. I've been doing my best to avoid the NFL. Part of that is because, you know, we had the NBA Finals until just over a month ago, and now you've had baseball since then. Plus, from my vantage point as a personal Cleveland guy, anything I could do to avoid talking about the worst-run organization in professional sports, I will do so. The Lions are actually, to me, a little more interesting to talk about. Well, ESPN has their projected starting lineups for everybody. And, of course, Chris Lemieux, when he's not here helping us out with some things, because he is a Toledo one after all, and when he's not here at the ticket helping us out with some things, he writes for PrideOfDetroit.com up there on SB Nation Lions site. And I want to get his thoughts as we go along on the Lions' projected lineup and if he thinks that looks about right or not. And we'll get the Browns one as well. And I wasn't able to because yesterday I ran out of time for this one. So I wasn't able to get to this one when I was subbing for Mike on drive time yesterday. But at some point between now and 6, I'm going to get into the whole Big 12 saying, oh, yeah, we're totally going to go ahead and expand again like we probably should have. Oh, I got thoughts on that because for what it's worth, guys, and this may be just me, but ever since the realignment that started with Nebraska coming over to the Big Ten, can you believe, by the way, it's been 5 years since that happened, by the way? Ever since then, one of my favorite side topics in all of sports is the dreaming up of scenarios for conference realignment, because every one of these moves will eventually have a counter move somewhere down the line. That's why if you look at the standings of each conference, you'll notice that every conference is basically completely different than it was 10 years ago. So the Big 12 has said they're going to expand. They're looking into it. The various teams who might be on the list have already started reaching out to them. So yeah, I'm going to finally get to that at some point. Also, some prize to give away to you today. We'll tell you about that as we go along as well. 866-240-1065. Anything and everything, always fair game, including those various topics, which we'll get into. Anthony Fenech, beat writer for the Tigers of the Detroit Free Press, will join us at 3:35. But I see we have Mark in Toledo lining up already on line one. He wants to get in really early here on the Extravaganza. I have no problem whatsoever with that. What's going on, Mark?
Hey, Jim, how's it going?
It's going well. What's on your mind today?
So I wanted to get your thoughts on what the Tribe should do at the deadline.
Okay.
In my opinion, I think we should pick up Miller and Beltran from the Yankees. Get rid of Anderson, and then I can't think of the kid's name right now, but we have a really good prospect down in Columbus right now.
Well, I know one of them that the Yankees were specifically scouting a couple of days ago. They had multiple scouts. Was Justus Sheffield, the lefty prospect.
Yes, him.
Okay, that's who you were thinking of. I thought you were about to refer to somebody else. Yeah, but the Yankees have already had guys out at Clippers games scouting him.
Yes, I think we need to pull that trigger and maybe even throw in a sweetener if we need to, but we cannot give up Naquin whatsoever. Naquin is no. Like, he's going to be a bona fide
all-star. Is Naquin now the Indians' version of Stephen Moya? Because the last couple of years when we had the Tigers' version of the same conversation, it always eventually came back to, well, somebody's going to ask for Stephen Moya, and it's no, we the Tigers are not getting rid of him. Are we saying the same thing for Naquin right now for the Indians?
Well, here's the difference. Naquin's good.
I still like Moya, and I think he has a lot to contribute in the future.
He's all right, but I mean, Naquin actually plays up in the show right now, and on the lead-in that you guys had the calls, I mean, he's hitting bombs right now. His defense has improved significantly since the beginning of the season. He's going to end up in a corner. He's not going to stay in center field. But we cannot move Naquin, but we need to do whatever we can to get another bullpen arm and a bat, because I don't think we're going to see Michael Brantley maybe until September.
Yeah, and that's really the sad part, and that's probably why one throws in the outfield thing, because, you know, think back 4 days ago before we learned that Michael Brantley had yet another setback, which you've counted spring training, his third setback of this whole process of trying to come back from that offseason shoulder surgery. And the thought was, well, that's going to be their quote-unquote acquisition for an outfield bat. And if that was going to be the plan, and assuming there was no setbacks and he really was going to be able to come back, I would have been totally fine with that. I'm now open to, you know, that possibility for an outfield bat. The question is then, who's going to get their at-bats taken away? Because you mentioned Naquin. Despite his age, I love what Rajay Davis has brought to the team, because, my gosh, the guy is leading the league, or worst case, is second right now in the league in stolen bases. And then, for what it's worth, Lonnie Chisenhall is actually sort of okay at the plate for once.
Lonnie is tearing the cover off the ball.
So that's the other question. When you talk about an outfielder, and I think this is why the thoughts before the setback certainly were, why get another bat? Because you're going to get Brantley bat, and that's all, back soon. And that's already going to mean some guys are going to obviously lose out on at-bats that are already playing halfway decent in the outfield, which we all assumed was going to be, myself included, the worst part of the Indians' position players. And it's turned out to be okay to pretty decent at times, given some of the things that I just threw out there. So I'm with you on that. I can tell you that things like one of the prospects, like Justus Sheffield, who, as I mentioned, the Yankees were scouting him recently, the Indians are very much in the bullpen mix, and specifically for a lefty. That's why you're hearing Andrew Miller specifically, or even Aroldis Chapman, because they're both lefties. That's why these guys are getting brought up, because I think I mentioned this yesterday, but I'll repeat it. I read the other day that the Indians only have 22 lefty reliever innings all season long. And you know there has to be lefty-lefty matchups in seventh innings in close games in October. And this is obviously where this team wants to go. I'm convinced they're going to acquire some kind of lefty reliever. Who it is and what they give up, that's the rumor stage at this point.
The thing with Tito is he doesn't really try to play the lefty-lefty, righty-righty matchup. He throws a good arm out there and has confidence in you being able to get somebody out.
That is true, but if he has that option, I promise you he'll use it for that purpose. He just doesn't have that option right now.
Well, yeah, so he uses Brian Shaw, who gives up, who, when his cutter is cutting, it's great. When it's not cutting, it's a low 90s, high 80s.
That is a great synopsis to his problem this season, because that's what I've noticed all year long. And that's part of the reason he's been getting bombed occasionally, like the other day, though, to his credit, the very next day he set him down in a key situation, 1-2-3. So a little credit where credit's due. But you're right. That's what's been burning him all season long when he's had his bad outings. It's just not – that pitch just isn't working in those bad outings.
One scenario for you, and I'll let you go.
Okay.
Would you take the Indians winning the World Series this year for 5 winless seasons from the Browns? The Browns go 0-16 for the next 5 years.
I'm going to upset many of Browns fans that may be listening right now, Mark, because just the way I happen to be raised in my family, we happen to be slightly baseball first in our family, even though we're from Cleveland. So my answer to that is, you bet it. You bet I would. Partly because, unlike, say, the Cavs title, I know if that happens, I'll be in the ballpark for it this time. So my answer to that, sorry, fellow Browns fans, is yes. If it meant the Indians win the World Series, making this the year 2016, the sports year of Cleveland, yes. If it meant 5-0-16 seasons out of the worst run franchise in sports, I would actually take that, yes. Sorry, fellow Browns fans. I know I upset you greatly on that one, but I'm with you. I am actually with you. My answer to that question, Mark, is yes, I would.
Well, the thing is, 0-16 isn't even out of the realm this season. I mean, Vegas has us losing every single game. So
yes, there is no chance, nor should there be, that the Browns will ever be favored in any game this season. I keep saying 5. The reason I keep saying 5-11, and by the way, I've already heard people say, and maybe this is still the leftover hangover from watching the Cavs win a title. I'm still hearing the idiots say, "Oh, the Browns are going to be 8-8 and right there." And I'm thinking, what is wrong with you guys? I want that too, but you have to play in the real world. I only have 5-11 right now because I'm going to assume Robert Griffin III has a halfway decent year. because he's playing for his career. They'll find a way to actually win a couple games, and assuming no big-time injuries, which you can't, which in football you can't do more than any of the other sports. Yeah, if all those things bounce right, they could be 5-11. Otherwise, you're looking at 3-13.
I think we're going to go 1-15 or 2-14.
The sad part is that wouldn't surprise me either, Mark. Neither of those numbers would surprise me. This team right now is still that bad. This is why, do you remember on draft night, and they made yet another trade, and yep. I started seeing the tweets from Browns people and Browns fans being like, almost, you know, back on the ledge. And I said, and I basically responded, because I had to go off on that one. I was like, you know, come on, guys. Stop going to the ledge. This is the time where we have to face facts. And I mentioned a couple, like how they've messed up drafts and all those kind of things. And the close to it was, if you're going to sleep better at night, here's what you do. Treat today as day one of the expansion Browns.
Yeah.
And at least look on the bright side. At least the expansion roster now is better than the 1999 expansion roster.
Yes. I mean, that's really what we have to do.
I promise you, Browns fans, if you take that mindset, you will sleep better at night this coming fall, every Sunday, watching the Browns look stupid again. I promise you it will work, because it's been working for me so far this summer. It really has.
Yeah, I mean, you're 100%. You hit the nail right on the head, because they're literally an expansion franchise right now. They're the worst franchise in all of pro sports. They have no idea what they're doing. I mean, thankfully, they got Hugh Jackson. I would love to see them get somebody like Mike Singletary in there as a D coordinator, somebody like that, next year. I don't know. I always have liked Mike Singletary, and I think he would bring a lot to the table. And we need to just do something different for the Browns.
Good call on that one, Mark. And thanks for chiming in. Anybody else got anything on these subjects and more? 866-240-1065. You can call in just like Mark did. And to re-answer, though, your original question about what would, you know, what should the Indians do? The lefty reliever, I'm promising you here on July 22nd, that will happen. The question is, what lefty reliever is it going to be, and what are they going to have to give up for it? That will happen. The outfield thing, I'm still not so sure of, even with this Brantley being out for longer. And, yeah, I'd almost think that, you know, September, and that's if we're crossing our fingers, as, again, the other day he suffered yet another setback, did Michael Brantley. So you almost, if you're the Indians brass, and this is possibly why the outfield thing may be coming back up, is because you almost have to assume he won't be back at all at this point. You can't plan on it the way we thinking we were just 3, 4, 5 days ago. You can't plan on it. The other rumor that's out there, and Ken Rosenthal, Fox Sports, again stressed that the Indians are reluctant to do this, but the rumors are still out there that apparently the Brewers and Indians are at least chatting right now on a Jonathan Lucroy, the catcher, deal to Cleveland. Because, of course, Yan Gomes is going to be out 4 to 8 weeks, which, as I was saying all of yesterday on this program and on Drive Time, let's just put that right in the middle and say 6 weeks, because it will probably be 6 weeks. So that rumor is still out there. I'm doubting that one's going to happen. I still doubt the outfielder thing is going to happen either. Again, just because they have gotten decent production out of their outfield. And, you know, you're still, whether it's Brantley or somebody from outside of the organization, when that happens, somebody out of those three specifically, and I guess four if you want to include Jose Ramirez, who plays in the outfield or third base, depending on if Tito feels like playing the old, you know, Juan Uribe that particular day or not, you're going to have, somebody's going to lose at bats. And I'm not sure who should lose the at-bats, because they've all been bringing something. Chisenhall's been better defensively and is finally hitting consistently. Like, he had a good first half to 2 years ago and then cooled off. This year, he's been pretty good since day one, and he's also hadn't had to switch positions. He's now the permanent right fielder. Rajay Davis, despite his age, he can play center, he can play left, and he's number one in the AL in stolen bases. You got to keep that guy in the lineup just for the steals, even if he's 36, just for the steals. And then so far, Tyler Naquin, whether it's left or center, is pretty self-explanatory. Guy's hitting over 320 with 11 homers, and he's a rookie. That's pretty. Who deserves to lose the playing time? I don't know. So I'm still 50-50 thinking right now if they're going to make any kind of outfield move, but it is possible. But the one move I can promise you between now and next Sunday the 31st that they will make, it's just a matter of who they get and who they have to give up and what other team is involved. They will be picking up a reliever, specifically a left-handed reliever, which is why, for those who have been paying attention to the rumor mill these past few days, Andrew Miller, the Yankees, is the first name you keep hearing. And the Indians have, in fact, reportedly been in talks with the Yankees to see what they can do to acquire him, which, of course, led to the story from the other day that two Yankee scouts were scouting Indians pitching prospect Justice Sheffield. So watch for him to possibly be part of that deal. All right, we got to take quick time out here on this edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Kuslin, Chris Lemieux in for Bob France today. We're also going to be in for Mike Miller on Drive Time in the 5 o'clock hour. Lots of time still for your phone calls. Lots of baseball subjects to get into. Are they going to limit relievers? The commish thinks so. I'm going to play that. We're going to talk about that. Buster Olney on ESPN.com with Mike and Mike had their 9 ways to improve the game, kind of based off the NFL discussion that they and we had the other day. And then at some point, I will be getting into Big 12 expansion. It's one again, maybe it's just me, guys, but the expansion stuff, realignment and conference expansions in college football, starting with the ones 5 years ago that it brought Nebraska to the Big Ten. I don't know why, but I love the story. It's one of my favorite random sports topics these last 5-6 years, and now we have news on it, and we'll get into that. But after this quick timeout, check of traffic, check of weather, local sports center update. We got to check in on the Tigers specifically. Our good buddy Anthony Fenech, beat writer of the Tigers for the Detroit Free Press. He's in Chicago where the Tigers will begin a 4-game series tonight. So we're going to break all that down and get his thoughts, because that's the question on Tigers. It's pretty obvious where the Indians are, trade deadline-wise. But in some ways, the Tigers are still in limbo. Do they buy? Do they sell? Do they stand pat? We had some calls yesterday on that, and it's still kind of a we're not sure at this moment. And, of course, you have Al Avila and not the, in this sense, predictable Dave Dombrowski out there. So I'm going to get Fenech's thoughts on that and all things Tigers. That's next here on this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
The 3-2 pitch. Swinging a drive to right field, way back in right and gone.
Change up.
Max Kepler absolutely crushes the 3-2 into the right field seats, and the Twins take a 2-1 lead.
It was a change up in his happy zone.
Strike one pitch, swinging a high fly ball way back in right center, and that ball is gone.
Yikes.
Rosario crushes the 2-run home.
Should have taken him out.
Yes, should have taken him out, but by then it was already too late as K-Rod gives up a pair of homers, wasting a great Justin Verlander performance. Tigers lose a home series to the worst team in the American League, now 7.5 out of first, and the questions abound. And to me, the main question, given the time of year and time of the baseball season we are, is what should this all make the Tigers? Are they buyers? Are they sellers? Should they stand pat? And oh, by the way, there's still some injuries, and when are some of those guys going to come back? Well, to answer all things Detroit Tigers related, we welcome in a friend of the show. He is the beat writer for the Detroit Free Press for those Tigers. He is Anthony Fenech, joining us, I believe, from Chicago. How you doing, Anthony?
Pretty good. I'm actually on, I-94 right now. I'm about to drive to U.S. Cellular Field. What should be an interesting 4-game series between the Tigers and the White Sox. So I will try to provide as many answers as I can.
Yeah, and this is an important series. So let's start with right there before we get into some of these other theoreticals. This is an important series. You took 2 out of 3 from the Kansas City Royals to start the break, but at home. Then you lose 2 out of 3 to the Twins. So from a Tigers point of view, no ground has been gained. There's still 7.5 out as of right now, and at 49 and 46, I think it is, only a couple games. I know it's only a couple games over 500. I may have the one number wrong. And this is a team, Anthony, that at its height this year was only, 49-46, so they're 3 games over 500. At their height, and I believe this was the end of May before they had that, or right before they had that really bad skid, the one that involved them losing 7 in a row and all the talk of Ausmus is about to be fired happened, they were 6 games over 500. That's the high mark. That's the high water mark so far for the Detroit Tigers this year. And so this is an important series. In fact, this is a very important road trip because you got Chicago for four. That's a divisional opponent who's been fading. Then you go to Boston, and I kind of teased it this way yesterday, Anthony, that by the time the Tigers get to Fenway on Monday, that may be a division leader. Well, the Red Sox are already a division leader after just overtaking the Orioles yesterday. So with the deadline coming up a little less than a week and a half from now, this is the time that the Tigers either have to go on a run to do something to prove that maybe they can make a move, or who knows. But this is a very important time for the Tigers if they're going to stay in this race.
Yeah, absolutely. They really got to shake their stagnant ways. I mean, you're right. I mean, they're going to be going into Boston. And I think looking at the wild card race right now, because I think everybody thinks rightly so that their best chance to make the postseason is the wild card race.
And they're four and a half out of that at this moment.
Yeah, and looking at that race, I mean, you just look at some of the teams ahead of them, like, you know, Toronto and even Houston, teams like that, Baltimore. It's hard to say that the Tigers are better than any of those teams right now. So they're still kind of in that limbo. What they do, what are they going to do before the trade deadline? They got to come out here and they got to win this series from the White Sox, because, you know, a split just going into Boston, a split's just not going to get it done. They're just middling right now, not making up really any ground. That was a bad loss for the Twins yesterday when Verlander's pitched the way he was, and just the whole series in general. I mean, four runs against the Minnesota Twins is not good. So they're going to have to come out here and they're going to have to get the job done against the White Sox, who I think are a better team than the record's shown. So I think it's going to be a dogfight of the series, so we'll see how it goes.
And you're absolutely right about that in general, whether you're talking the Twins, who they just finished up at Comerica Park, or you're talking these White Sox, where the Tigers will be first of four tonight. They have to be able to win these series. Splits won't do anymore. You got to take two out of three and three out of four at minimum from the teams you should take them from, which would be teams like Minnesota and Chicago. And I'm not sure because how they do it, because, yeah, we talked about injury stuff, and I'll get to that here in a second, but you mentioned the word stagnant, and at times it feels that way. I mean, you know, despite the K-Rod, by K-Rod blowing it the way he did in that tie game of the ninth, it kind of masked the fact that after Ian Kinsler let off the bottom of the first for the Tigers, let off the game with that solo home run, they got literally bupkissed the rest of the day against the Twins, who have the worst starting rotation in the American League. You can't be shut down like that with a series win against a team you need to beat on the line in your own yard. You can't have these things happen from here on out, or there won't be any playoffs at all.
No, absolutely. And I guess from my perspective, what you want to see, what you wanted to see over the last 3 days was a little bit more urgency. And that's something that you wanted to feel a little bit more urgency all year from the Tigers. They just were unable to show it. And, I mean, look, Victor Martinez and Miguel Cabrera are really struggling at the plate right now, and they're really hurting them. And it's only exacerbated by the fact that J.D. Martinez is still hurt. I mean, when you have those guys struggling and J.D.'s in the lineup, well, then he provides a little bit of insurance. Upton still hasn't been able to get it going. And really, the offense is not a spot on the team where you'd expect to fail them. But recently, it has. You know, it's just something that you always expect that, you know, when I look at this team, you always expect there to be some light at the end of the tunnel, but we have yet to see that light. I mean, there's so many good baseball players on this team, but they just haven't been able to put it together yet.
No, they haven't. As we talk with Anthony Fenech, beat writer for the Detroit Tigers, Detroit Free Press. He's in Chicago as the Tigers getting ready for a four-game series against the White Sox. And all the series critical now. It'll be Mike Pelfrey, James Shields, by the way, in this one tonight. Let's get to some of the other things that are with the Tigers. Start with on the injury front. You know, we know where we're at right now is J.D. Martinez, Jordan Zimmerman, Zimmerman, and Daniel Norris. What are their statuses right now? When can we expect some of these guys back? Because the Tigers need pretty much all three of them at this point.
Well, I would expect Norris to come back after his next rehab start, which is going to be this weekend. I'm a little bit surprised that they didn't push Norris back into the starting rotation after his last one, but they want to get his pitch count up a little bit more to 80, 85 pitches. So that should be good. I mean, they're sending Anibal Sanchez out there. He struck out 10 last game. But, again, it's against the Twins. I mean, you got to take all these games against the Twins, even Matt Boyd's game, with a little bit of a grain of salt. And then Jordan Zimmerman, he's going to be throwing a bullpen today. So I will have a report on Twitter later on. But then after that, he should probably be good to go for a rehab assignment after that, which could probably be two rehab appearances because he hasn't pitched since June 30th. So I really don't expect Zimmerman until shortly after the trade deadline, which is kind of an issue. I mean, look, when you're looking at their team shaping up for the trade deadline, I feel like it's going to be it's big on Jordan Zimmerman to pitch the way that he was. Not necessarily in April because he was pitching out of his mind then, but he's a little bit in between what he was in April and the rest of the first half, a little bit closer to what he was in April. So they're really going to be counting on Zimmerman big in the second half, but I wouldn't expect him until the beginning of next month.
What about J.D. Martinez and that fracture in the elbow? Because he's obviously been a big cog in this lineup for these last couple of years, and he's somebody that they desperately need back on the offensive end. What's his status at this point?
Well, as of the beginning of the week, he was throwing but still experiencing some pain, so he's still at least a couple weeks away, probably closer to three. And then you got the whole rehab assignment. He's going to need at least 4 or 5 days to get his swing and timing back. So really what was initially a 4 to 6 week kind of thing is looking to be like a 6 to 8 week kind of thing, which isn't really that surprising given the nature of the injury. So I wouldn't be expecting JD back anytime soon, but, they certainly need him if, you know, both at the plate and in the field. I mean, we all saw Steven Moya struggle out there. So, they really need to get JD back.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, thank you for bringing up Steven Moya, because that was actually wonderful to inadvertently segue at Anthony Fenneca, the Detroit Free Press Tigers beat writer. He's in Chicago getting ready for the Tigers White Sox series, because I've been dying to ask you this for about 2 days now. Why is it just that he was struggling, or is there another reason why it was Steven Moya who was sent down the other day when Justin Upton came back from the bereavement list and not Tyler Collins? Or am I just reading too much into this and he was just simply struggling, so get him at Triple-A at bats? What was the real reason there?
I think it was mostly defensive, and, I mean, the offensive struggles as of late didn't help. I think that they feel like Collins is a more well-rounded player at this point that they can put in right field, give him more consistent at-bats. I mean, it is kind of interesting given, look, Moya's hitting with some power, and Moya's showed a lot more he showed a lot of maturity at the plate than he did in years past. So I was a little bit surprised by the move, but he was really killing them in the outfield. I mean, he was just really killing them. I mean, he wasn't taking right routes to the ball. He was too slow in getting the ball. His brother had the cutoff man. Just a really small thing. And I think that all factored in with his late struggles. I think they wanted to just get him some more seasoning in AAA. But look, if this offense keeps going the way it is, it wouldn't be surprised if he got called up here again shortly.
Yeah, and defensive struggles aside, Anthony, and even some struggles at the plate, if the Tigers were going to trade for anybody, is Steven Moya still on the hands-off list that they won't trade him, that they wouldn't trade him in any situation?
It would seem to me more likely than not he would be. Just because, I mean, they just don't fit up really well with some teams now on a trade front. Look, yeah, they need starting pitching, but look, once Zimmerman and Norris come back, they're not going to have room for a starting pitcher, and they're not ready to pull the plug on Mike Pelfrey. So I really don't, you know, the conventional wisdom is that maybe they can go get a back end kind of an arm. I really, I don't see that right now. So I think Steven Moya is going to stay put. I mean, the Tigers have talked all along about keeping their cost control players, their prospects. It would be a surprise. It'd be a surprise if they packaged Moya with maybe a lesser known prospect to get a starting pitcher, because look, in a couple of weeks there's gonna be no room for that starting pitcher. So it surprised me if they moved Moya.
And you know, that's a good point, and especially very insightful about Mike Pelfrey, because one would think if they were to go get somebody, and then you get the Norris and Zimmerman back from injury, then logic would say that it has to be Pelfrey who would have to go to the bullpen in such a scenario. But if you're saying they're not ready to give up on that, and they're not going to probably make any package on the grounds that they're going to get two starters back, it kind of leads to the next question, something that I've been juggling around, Anthony, with some callers these last couple days. I've been asking Tigers fans to call to tell me, would you rather have them buy, sell, or stand pat? And the reason, of course, is we know that this is a legitimate question right now, is because three over 500, 4.5 out of the wild card, 7.5 out of the division, and you're a week and a half away from the deadline, they're kind of in that weird no man's land where it's a legitimate debate as to which path to go. Unlike, say, my Indians, who they're where they are and they're clearly going to be buying something. The Tigers are in kind of a limbo and you're not really sure which path they're going to go. Anything you're hearing to indicate which direction, buy, sell, or stand path that they may be looking at right now?
I mean, I think that I think the words you brought up are spot on. They're a little bit in no man's land right now, and that's why I think this road trip. I mean, I don't know if it's critical to push the needle one way or another, but it's going to be interesting to see what they do because you're right. I mean, they just you say buy, but what do they have to give up to buy? You know what I mean? Where they're at in the standings right now? It's just. You know, I think personally, from what I've heard from a couple of people within the organization, is that they're going to be more of a stand pack kind of team right now. You know, if they could find an upgrade in the bullpen, I think they'd make it if it was a very cost effective kind of move. But I think their trade deadline moves are going to be, you know, getting Jordan Zimmermann back, getting Daniel Norris back, getting JD Martinez back, and hopefully having Miguel Cabrera and Victor Martinez hit like the way that they should. That to me is going to be their deadline moves because they simply don't have the prospect currency to make a big move right now or the kind of payroll to make a big move. And then to add that, I mean, there's just not a big starting pitching market where you can get a top four guy. So I know the Tigers have been aggressive in trade deadlines past. This is a little bit of a different scenario, so I think they're going to be a stand pat kind of team.
And not only is it a little different scenario because of the no man's land they find in the standings, it's Alavila's first trade deadline as the Tigers GM. You could almost set your watch to what Dave Dombrowski was going to do to a small degree. You know, you're still not sure how Alavila would approach this, and it almost makes me think, especially based on what you said, because, you know, that's a good point. They're going to get some of these guys back from injury. They don't have a ton that they could make a package with. Would a possible plan be if they still want to try to be in this thing? Because I still think they're the best competition for the Indians in the division. I hate the Royals rotation, and they're a 500 team now. We kind of all know about Chicago. They had that really good April, and they've been mediocre ever since, and that's probably where they're going to stay. So that leaves you Tigers and Indians, despite the 7.5 game spread. Is this a situation where they may take that extra month, get some of these guys back from injury, and reconvene and see where they are at the end of August before that deadline?
Yeah, I could see that. Generally speaking, you don't make real big moves at the end of August. I know there's still the non-waiver or the waiver trade deadline there. That could be an option. But to me, it comes down to right now. I mean, you know, going into the season, we look at how, you know, Aníbal Sánchez is really, you know, the X factor there. Well, now it's Jordan Zimmermann. I mean, they're getting that big contract in the offseason. He really needs to stabilize that rotation. Because I agree with you. I think they're easily the best competition for the Indians in the Central Division. But looking at the teams they're bunched together with in the wild card race, again, it's hard to put them ahead of like a team like, you know, Toronto or Boston or Houston. And I do think that, you know, when you're matching up the Tigers in Kansas City, I think they're pretty even, to be honest with you. So it'll be interesting to see how these next few weeks play out.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And by the way, you mentioned Houston is one of those teams that is had a horrible April, and they're now right back in the thick of it. They're also only 4.5 games behind Texas right now in that West. Yeah, when the deadline itself hits next weekend, Anthony, we're all going to get an up-close personal look at those Houston Astros, because that's who's coming to Comerica Park next Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right when the deadline hits, which, you know, makes this stretch even trickier, because we mentioned the 7 road games, first 4 in Chicago, then 3 at Boston. They take a week from today off, and then it's home for Houston, right, as the deadline's there, and that's not an easy team, obviously, either. A couple last quick questions before I let you go. You mentioned this a few minutes ago, and I've heard other Tigers fans mention this, that something's wrong with Miguel Cabrera. He's at 289, 18 homers, 53 RBIs, and yeah, considering what we expect out of a Miguel Cabrera, and you mentioned Victor Martinez, who's at 291, 1755, for example, what is exactly wrong with them? Because obviously those numbers, we're used to them being a little higher from Cabrera. I gotta say, I look at Victor's numbers, and I'm for the most part okay with that. So when I hear Tigers fans and even reporters such as yourself saying there's something wrong with Cabrera, what are we talking here?
I wish I could tell you what was wrong with Miguel Cabrera. I just think
Are we just too spoiled expecting him to hit 330 with 35-plus bombs every year? Are we just too spoiled from this guy? Is that what part of this might be?
I wouldn't say we're too spoiled, but I would say that it's just he's just struggling right now. I think that there's a clear that's the ticket machine here that's going to drive.
Well, we know where Fennec is, everybody. He's just getting a U.S. Cellular there in Chicago. Of course, yeah. Tigers taking on the White Sox. We'll have it for you. 7:45 pregame time over on the AM side. Continue.
It would not shock me if Cabrera was battling some issues here. I mean, whether it be lower body. This is not something that will keep him on the disabled list, but something just the nicks and bruises of going through a baseball season. Because right now, at this point, it's not about Cabrera being 100% healthy. It's about being as close to 100% healthy as possible. But still, I think that, look, hitting the baseball is the hardest thing to do. And I think our standards for Miguel Cabrera are a little bit high. But look, when his batting average is 300, I mean, Cabrera is the guy that steps out of bed and hits 300, you know?
Right.
With Victor Martinez, I just think that he needs to be a little bit more patient at the plate. Pitchers are being able to get him out by throwing himself out of the zone. So that's what I think the situation with Martinez. But both those guys need to kind of step it up here.
Now, I know you're getting to the ballpark, so therefore you got to get ready for tonight's game. So last question, Anthony Fennec, Tigers beat writer for the Detroit Free Press, joining us here on The Ticket. Last question before I let you go. We had fun with the football version here on our show the other day, and Buster Olney, who's been hanging around the Mike and Mike guys, they had some fun with it the other day. 9 ways that he would improve baseball. I'm not going to read them all for you because we don't have enough time for that, but with you being a baseball writer, if you had one thing that you would throw out there to improve baseball, what would be Anthony Fennec's top remedy?
I saw Buster's list, and the one thing that stood out to me was the single ticket doubleheaders, which are never going to happen because the owners are too money hungry and they're not going to give up a gate profit like that. You know what? People aren't going to like this, but I would go back to more of the human element. I'm more of a human element kind of guy. I like the arguing with the umpires. I think that I think baseball's missing a little bit of that now. But I would also change the whole process of the managers being able to get to communicate with the dugout in terms of the reviews. So, you know, there's a close play at second place. There's a close play at second base, and they get the word from the guy in the dugout or in the clubhouse. I would just have the managers go through on their own gut, and then I think that it becomes more of which managers are good at kind of seeing the play in the field.
And all those are great answers, and I love the doubleheader answer. I personally, and I like you, I am fully aware it's never going to happen because the owners don't want to lose the gate. I've been a fan for years because everybody always complains, among other things, that, oh, the season's too long. And my response has always been, for at least 8 years now, Anthony, you want to shorten the season? I can shorten it by at least a week. Sunday scheduled doubleheaders, just like the olden days. Ta-da!
Yep, yep.
And there's your extra week right there. But you're absolutely right. We both sadly know it won't happen because the owners don't want to lose that extra money, because that's what it always comes back to. Anthony, enjoy your time out there in Chicago. I think it's safe to say we hope this goes a little better for the Tigers. They're in a bit of a semi-funk right now. 4 in Chicago, then 3 in Boston. Sometime next week, whether it's before they leave Fenway or not, we'll have to get in touch with you again and see if we're any closer to some answers on what the Tigers might do at the deadline and where they stand. We always appreciate your time, and we'll catch up with you next week.
James, thanks a lot.
All right, that is Anthony Fennec, Tony, as it were, the beat writer for the Detroit Tigers for the Detroit Free Press, giving you a whole bunch of Tiger insights here on The Ticket. We got to take a quick time out, though. Top of the hour, Sports Center update and all sorts of other things coming in. It seems I have about a minute or so before Chris Lemieux, who's hanging out with me today, has to hit that good old button and get us to a top of the hour on time. So while I have this extra minute, let's give you some goodies. How do you like that? I got a $50 ticket suite deal gift certificate to Cobo Loco, Mexi Bar and Burgers in Northwood. You can log on tomorrow to 1065theticket.com starting at 9 a.m. to get that $50 gift certificate, until they sell out, of course, for just $25. But hey, if you want to pay zero, nada, zilch, Oh, I got the best way to do it. All you got to do is be caller number 10 right now at 866-240-1065, and we will hook you up. $50 gift, sweet deal gift certificate to Cobo Loco Mexi Bar and Burgers in Northwood. Caller number 10 right now. More talk on baseball and some Big 12 expansion and maybe some projected lineups. I know Anthony's got – or Anthony. I know Chris here has some thoughts on the projected Lions lineup. We'll get to all that and your phone calls next hour as we roll along here on the Extravaganza. Jim Kusslin, Chris Lemieux in for Bob Prance on this Thursday edition on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
The fly ball hit pretty deep to left field. Back is Ivner. He's out of room, and it is. I lost it. It's gone. Just did clear the wall, and Tyler Naquin has gone oppo for the Indians' second home run of the day. His 11th home run on the year. Naquin rips it down the right field line. That'll go into the corner. Chisenhall scores. Rajay Davis rolls around third. He'll score two. Naquin stops at second base with a two-out, two-run double to make it a 4-0 Indians lead.
All right.
And now Naquin sends another drive. Deep center. Dyson is back. He's looking up, and that's long gone.
Wow.
Holy mackerel. Off the batter's eye backdrop in dead central. And Tyler Naquin has a two-homer game. And that was an absolute rocket shot to straightaway center. He's driven in six runs in the ballgame.
Kinsler, Maben, Cabrera to face him in the first. There's a swing and a fly ball left field off the bat of Kinsler. Watch it fly. Gone. 1-1 tie in the first. K-Rod's trying to make it a 1-2-3 ninth in a 1-1 game. The 3-2 pitch. Swinging a drive to right field. Way back in right and gone.
Change up.
Max Kepler absolutely crushes the 3-2 into the right field seats, and the Twins take a 2-1 lead.
It was a change up in his happy zone.
Strike one pitch. Swinging a high fly ball way back in right center, and that ball is gone.
Yikes.
Rosario crushes a two-run home.
Should have taken him out.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back in hour number two of this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Kusslin and Chris Lemieux hanging out with you on this Thursday. Bob France is out today. It'll be the two of us also in for drive time as Mike Miller is off all of this week. Vacationing in the hinterland somewhere, but he'll be back before you know it. So you got us for three total hours, two more of them to go. And it's open phone lines the rest of this hour at 866-240-1065. Thanks so much again to Anthony Fenech, beat writer for the Detroit Free Press for the Tigers, for joining us last hour, giving us talking all things Tigers. They open a four-game series tonight in Chicago against the White Sox, Pelfrey and James Shields. In that one, and these are all huge, huge games for the Detroit Tigers coming up. You know what's funny about that montage I put together? Even though I think I got most of those clips since we had some afternoon baseball fun yesterday during the shows, I got most of those clips on the air before we left yesterday. But still, on the one hand, Jim Price there with Dan Dickerson, should have taken him out, really. That is so true. Too bad that was about four batters too late. Because that's why I love that those two clips right there. One of them ends with the should have taken him out, and the other one begins with, he's one strike away from getting out of a 1-2-3 ninth inning, which would have been a tie game, and then the wheels fall off. The other part of it, I could have had a 5-minute montage on all the damage the Indians did to the Kansas City Royals yesterday afternoon, but really that was the Tyler Naquin show. He went 3-for-4, two homers. He also walked and a double, and he nearly beat out a single to first base, had six RBIs on the day. Yeah, Napoli and Santana and Kipnis homer, and there were a few other things, and Carlos Carrasco had a one-hitter in his six innings of work, but that was the Tyler Naquin show yesterday for that one. So had fun with all of that, and the Indians are off today, by the way. They are in Baltimore to finish off their RNC road trip. That's why they've been on the road this entire time, because of the whole RNC going on across the state right now. So that's why they're on the road through this weekend, are the Indians. Even though, for Jacobs Field. Yes, I just went there. It's still Jacobs Field to me, sorry. Even though that's not specifically hosting any event, it would just create more headaches in that little area since it's all in the same kind of place. But we got lots of other things to go over here this hour, but you want to chime in on anything we've already discussed or will be discussing, phone lines are open this hour at 866-240-1065. Some of the other topics are it's mostly a shift from baseball to some football things, although I do and I will at some point this hour, and if I don't get to it this hour, well, I'm here for another hour for Drive Time, Mike Miller. I'll play that clip and get into why I think Rod Manfred is out of his mind for suggesting what he suggested on Mike and Mike here this morning. So play that for you. But shifting things to football, and there are two football things I want to get into. One's just a fun thing, and it just so happens Chris Lemieux, who when he's, you know, Toledoan, but when he's not helping us out here at the Ticket, we always appreciate his hard work now that he's helping us out with. He's one of the writers for PrideOfDetroit.com, which is the Lions site over there on SB Nation. And ESPN came out today with their projected starting lineups for all 32 NFL teams, which includes the Browns and the Lions. So we're going to go over them and see what they said, and especially for the Lions' point of view, see whether Chris thinks that's about right or not. But the first thing to get into today, football related, because I simply wanted to do this yesterday when the story was breaking, but I ran out of time. It happens. But I'm doing it now because it's one of my favorite side subjects, at least for the last 6 years, in all of sports when it comes up. And that's college football conference expansion / realignment. And we have a new story on that. We all thought it was finally dead. Oh, no, it's far from dead, as the Big 12, who's in the midst, I believe, of their media days this week, basically came out and said, yeah, you know what, maybe for the 2018 season, we'll have this straightened out, i.e. 2 years from now, so yeah, this season and next season still. But yeah, we're going to go ahead and re-expand back to at least 12. Hey, might even be 14. So let the speculating begin. Who is on their way to the Big 12? I'm going to throw out my top five names, and these are have been sprinkled around for by everybody, it seems, since this all came out yesterday. My possible candidates, because they're going to at least 12, even though they're technically breaking college football's rule and starting next year, they're going to have a title game, even though the conference will still have 10 teams in it, because they've already seen how not having the title game has bit them in the rear end in the first 2 years of the college playoff. They didn't get anybody in last year, barely got anybody in this past year. So, but make no mistake, it's because they don't have a title game right now is what's biting them in the butt.
Right, and you
even
know,
though they hated it, that's why they didn't mind when everybody left, Chris, because they hated the title game, and in the BCS era, it did burn the Big 12 twice upset happened in their championship game. But now it's biting them in the wrong way.
I think what happened though, like 2 years ago, when both TCU and Baylor got left out,
that's five and six.
But that was kind of the fear of a lot of the smaller schools in the Big 12, was that if your name is not Texas or Oklahoma, and you
Texas
have one loss.
Texas is still a mediocre team right now.
But unless that's like you have that brand name,
yes,
you will get left out. And we saw that on display because Oklahoma, 11-1, and they get in. But granted, you could point to a lot of other things if you wanted to, but that's kind of the underlying fear of a lot of these schools that
right.
are in here. And to be clear, too, like they may not be expand. They just said they're tabling the discussion. You know, Texas is still going to be a big opponent to any expansion, no matter what happens. So
well, the reason
we'll see
they
what happens
at
yeah.
the same time, though, Chris, the reason this all broke yesterday, saying that they will be looking into it, leads me to believe that because you're absolutely right, Texas is specifically because it's not like Big 12 right now is not like the other conferences. They don't have their own network. They're quickly becoming, especially once you get past Oklahoma and the Longhorns, they're quickly becoming that fifth other conference.
Well, they have a lot of good.
And part of that is it has been Texas and the Longhorns throwing their weight around with the Longhorn Network,
right,
among other things. So the reason that, so I'm speculating, and I may be off base here, but I feel pretty good in speculating this, that the reason they went public with this the other day saying, yeah, we're totally going to look into expansion, we're going to start contacting possible candidates, and said candidates are already reaching out to them within 24 hours. I read a story in the Blade today that Cincinnati, who is one of the rumored teams already, they've literally already contacted the Big 12. It all leads me to believe that Texas is softening their stance a little bit. Otherwise, they wouldn't have even said anything publicly.
It's either that or they're throwing a bone to every other party out there, because if they say straight up, we're going to stay at 10 teams, what then you see is that a lot of these other schools might start flirting with the other four Power 5 conferences.
And they need to prevent that from happening, because
right.
I actually...
If it stays at 10, it's basically saying we're keeping together until we can't keep together.
Which is the path they don't want to go down. It got them burned in the last round of
right.
realignment a few years ago.
It almost died and quite, in the last realignment.
Oh, here's one for you, because I actually did the simple math when I was looking over this yesterday. There are 10 teams in the Big 12, right?
Right.
Big 10, 14, mm-hmm. SEC 14, ACC 14, Pac 12... 12, right?
Yeah.
So that's, if you blew those all up to 16, which has been a rumor forever since the last round started and will continue to be a rumor that eventually we're going to get four 16-team super conferences. If you did your math just now when I read off the other four power conferences, you'll notice that the space between where they are and 16 comes out to exactly 10 teams, which means theoretically you could just carve up the entire Big 12,
right.
spread all the teams to the other four, and there's your four 16-team conferences.
Yeah.
Big 12 needs to prevent that from happening,
yeah,
because eventually everyone not named Texas and Oklahoma is going to start getting on the phones to the other guys before it's too late.
Sure, like, you know, Pac-12 almost had Texas last
right.
time around. Oklahoma will be safe with the Big Ten or the SEC. Someone probably picks up Kansas for the basketball, but, like,
if they don't expand and get a travel partner, I can't believe West Virginia is going to want to hang around
right,
all that much longer.
What do you do if you're, like, a Kansas State or like, Baylor, which looks like their football dominance is about to completely
or
go
or Kansas, tank. Who's horrible in football, but you can dangle the Jayhawks hoops
right,
program.
Right. But, like, you know... Those who don't have the basketball program back up, like, again, in Oklahoma State, too, like all these other schools in the Big 12 that are, like, hanging on to
They don't
Oklahoma,
want to end
Texas.
Up where Houston or TCU ended up after
yeah.
the Big 8 and Southwest merged, and that was 20 years ago. Because
yeah.
they got left in mid-major status for the longest
oh, yeah.
time.
Baylor
and TCU just got
too.
Out of it.
Yeah.
No, Baylor was included. The
Baylor
four,
included.
If you recall,
right.
back
yeah,
in
yeah.
those days, the four that were left out originally were SMU, TCU, Houston,
and Rice. Yeah.
And Rice ain't going anywhere. TCU is now in the Big 12, and that leaves Houston and SMU. And yeah, if you're an Oklahoma State, if you're a Kansas State, you don't want to end up in that kind of limbo where you're the same as Cincinnati.
You want a partner today.
Or South Florida or Nevada. You don't want to end up in their position.
Especially as the have-nots of the FBS grow to the point where we might have another division split.
And that's also been a rumor that's been out there. And so already within 24 hours, the college football world has understandably gone a little ape about this with the speculation of exactly who it's going to be. And for me, as I've looked over all of it and tried to make sense of it, because one thing to keep in mind, the last round of realignment in college football taught us that it's not so much what you bring on the field or even the basketball court. It's what money and markets can you bring us? We all know the story here in this backyard because it had to be only about money and markets, because otherwise the Big Ten never would have admitted somebody like Maryland or Rutgers, because football-wise, they've both been bad. In basketball, Maryland's okay, but Rutgers is one of the worst basketball programs at the highest level. Those were about markets. And I get the impression, because of the differences in the Big 12, such as the Longhorn Network, not having their own network. You just heard on the national sports centers that the ACC is going to launch their own network. The SEC now has one. The Pac-12 has one. And we all know about the Big Ten. That's the oldest of them right now. The Big 12 is not in any market to do that. And part of that is the whole Texas thing.
Right.
So you're trying not to be left out of things, as you mentioned. You're trying to get ahead of this game. And that means others are going to want that. And the flip side of that, though, is those other schools... And essentially, we mean everybody in college football not named Notre Dame. This may be the last chance to upgrade yourself to major status. This may be the last chance if it keeps going this way. Because either the Big Ten is Big 12 will stabilize at 12 or 14 after this, or they're going to fail, screw up again, and they'll all just get consumed by the other four power conferences, and then everybody else below that is really left in the dust. As such, and some of these schools, I kid you not, have already contacted the Big 12 in the last 24 hours, my probable candidates, and then you list yours or debate with mine, my probable candidates look like this, in this order: BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, Memphis, Colorado State. Markets is not necessarily as important for this Big 12 one as the other one, say when the Big 10 brought in Rutgers and Maryland.
Right, as you said,
you
like,
want, because they need somebody, because you're also at the point, though, and this is why I don't think markets are as important here, what you do on the field in the court, sort of on the court, is more important a little bit this time, because by expanding in general anyway, you're not taking anybody from the other four power conferences, which means by definition you're going below. Which means the markets are irrelevant. You got to get somebody that's good and or has a history. If Texas and the Mormons with BYU can literally work out their differences, I see no reason why that shouldn't be the top choice of the Big 12 right there. I mean, BYU is not, remember, they're an independent now, and they were in the Mountain West and WAC before that. But they're not in a position, despite their following, and don't mistake, you know, sometimes we laugh at them and things like that, but BYU really does have a gigantic following out west. It just does. It's part of the culture and yada yada. But they're not in a position and never will be in the position as an independent that Notre Dame gets. They're tied into the Holiday Bowl, and they're getting crud opponents when they get there. But they have a rich history. They're still right now the only non-major school to ever win a national championship. 1984. So, and they're halfway decent at basketball too. So if they can, if literally thinking out loud, if Texas and the Mormons, and I hate to say it that way, but that's basically what it comes down to. If Texas and the Mormons can work out their differences, then BYU should be choice number one. I put Cincinnati at number two, mainly because you got to throw some kind of bone to West Virginia. They're out on this island nearly 1,000 miles away from anyone else in the conference. It's utterly ridiculous, especially in non-football scenarios. You know, you got road trips you got to go to in basketball season twice a week halfway across the country. That's just in your conference. That's just silly. They need somebody closer. And that's the only reason I have Cincinnati number two and not Houston or Memphis, which gives you programs that are up and coming and or have a history, up and coming Memphis, somewhat of a history in Houston, and have bigger markets than Cincinnati. But you need somebody at least semi-close to West Virginia. Otherwise, eventually West Virginia is going to find a way to leave because it's just too ridiculous. And then I threw in Colorado State as the other because you will go west, and if you can't get BYU because you can't work out your differences, you got to go get the Denver market back. You know, I know Colorado Buffaloes were horrible for the most part in the Big 12. Yeah, they had that one year, I think it was 1990, but otherwise they've been pretty bad, and they've been awful since going to the Pac-12. But it's still the Denver-Colorado market, and that's still a pretty big one that really, outside of Colorado with the Pac-12, nobody else has a stake in. So that's why I put Colorado State as fifth, only on the grounds, really, that you'd consider them if you can't get BYU. And the others are, you know, decent programs on both football, basketball. They are all in decent-sized markets in cities. So you go that route. But that's my order right now. If I'm the Big 12... I'd go BYU, Cincinnati if I'm 12, and then I'd include Houston, Memphis if I go to 14. Because that's the other part of the story that when it came out yesterday, that not only are they looking into it, they have not decided if they want to go to 12 or to 14 when they do it.
I think they can only go to 12. Like, going to 14 would probably upset the powers that would control this a little too much. There are going to have to be some compromises here. And that's why I like BYU a lot. Like, I think that's probably an obvious solution, even though...
Again, as long as they and Texas specifically can work out their differences, that's the perfect fit
and
should be topped on the list.
BYU, if they had their choice, they'd rather go to the Pac-12.
That is true. That came out last round as well.
Yeah, but they might just have to sit through the Big 12 for the interim and just kind of see how it plays out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, like, that is too enticing of a thing, like, you know...
Because BYU has to... They're, again, they're not... and never will be looked at as an independent the way Notre Dame is. So they're in a weird catch-22 that they, unlike Notre Dame, they have to get themselves back into a conference. And at this point, it sounds like from BYU perspective, it's like we're either going to a power conference or we're staying independent.
And I'm sorry to Boise State, who has had a fantastic run in football, but BYU is just kind of the more sexy program out west.
I didn't even put Boise on my list, despite their success on the field. Remember, I said if you can't get BYU, I put Colorado State on the grounds of the Denver market because, quite frankly, once you strip away the fun they've had on the blue turf, you're still talking about Boise, Idaho, for goodness sake.
I think we can comfortably leave out UCF and Connecticut.
I kept seeing people bring up those names, and I don't
UCF
see it happening.
UCF might have worked a little bit ago, but here's the thing. Like, as you say, like, markets don't matter. So going to get Florida or New England, it doesn't matter because the Longhorn Network basically
the only part about markets that matter is putting yourself in footprints that you either used to be in or not necessarily in. But you got to combine those with halfway decent programs. And right now, South Florida is mediocre, and I know they're getting a new stadium, and they had a good year a couple years ago, but Central Florida was winless, for goodness sake, last year. You can't be bringing that team to play conference games with Oklahoma after they go 0-12. You just can't do that.
I would say, though, of what we've got remaining, like I want to talk on these top two in a second, but first, just real quick, Tulane might be a weird dark horse just because of academics, but that's something like the Big 12 could be weird enough to do. Houston, old Southwest Conference ties, but if it's a shot between Memphis and Cincinnati, I think that's where it is. But I would also say, like, if there's a chance for Cincinnati to get upset, it would be by Memphis.
I agree.
Here's a very important fact.
And I think you're about to tell why, because I saw this too. It could – I put Cincinnati first just because they're closer to West Virginia. But between them and Memphis, my smart money's on Memphis, and now you tell us why.
First off, FedEx has been dangling a lot of money in front of the Big 12.
The gist of it is, everybody, is – FedEx went to Memphis and say, if you could get yourself in a power conference, we're giving you buckets of cash. Yeah, that's basically the gist of it.
That appeals to these, again, like the main driver of this thing is money with these schools. It's about, like, if they expand, they don't want to lose too much money. And the other factor in Memphis's favor is that they sent a letter to West Virginia, I believe, Gordon Gee, Memphis President David Rudd. Let's see here. Unique position for Memphis to request only a portion of new revenue for several years until the renegotiation of conference media rights agreement occurs. So that basically means Memphis could basically take a pay cut into the revenue sharing of the Big 12, which, again, if you're pitching this to a Texas or any of the other schools who are afraid of losing money, that makes Memphis more attractive.
Right, and that's such a great point. That's the X factor that I can easily see. In my rankings, I'm trying not to factor that in, but in the real world, that's a factor, and if that's why they would choose Memphis over Cincinnati in such a scenario, what you just said is exactly why they would do it. 866-240-1065. To me, there's one other possible aspect of this. In this possible Big 12 expansion, which sounds more probable, it's just a matter of what schools are coming when is what it sounds like. And even in the when they were talking about it yesterday, the Big 12 people, they said we're looking at, you know, doing all the research, making all the contacts, and hopefully having this ready to go by the 2018 season. So they're giving themselves a 2-year window. On the one hand, and you and I, Chris, were talking about this off the air before we started the segment. On the one hand, you would have a scenario where if the Big 12 loses out again and stands where they're at, in the rumor that we all have heard about, eventually you're just going to have 4 16-team super conferences. You guys remember that? If you do your quick math, ACC, SEC, Big Ten have 14, and the Pac-12 has 12. If to each to go up to 16, there's exactly 10 spots open, and there's exactly 10 teams in the Big 12. So if they lose out again, yes, it is possible that one day in the future, the entire Big 12 will get carved up and sent to the other conferences. The Big 12, understandably, doesn't want that. Flip side, even if it's the BYUs and the Cincinnati's and Memphis's of the world, if the Big 12 can make this happen, get to 12 or even 14, and I'm with you, I think they should start at 12 first, but you never know with these things. I never thought the ACC went to 12, everything was fine, and then they brought in more teams, so I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, it's funny you bring up the ACC because you're talking about dividing it up evenly, but you do have the Notre Dame thing for the ACC, and this was actually a fun little tidbit about that ACC network.
Mm-hmm.
is that because of how the ACC has basically locked their arms to try to prevent schools from leaving.
Yes, they have.
Because
Notre Dame, I'm a Virginia Tech grad, so I know this story thoroughly.
And Notre Dame, because they're not in there with football, but they have the agreement with football, but they're ACC in all other sports. But because of this ACC network thing, if they decide they want to join a conference between the 2035-2036 academic season, it has to be the Atlantic Coast Conference. So they're locked in with the ACC. So
yes, I do remember reading that. By the way, my interpretation of that is they will not be joining the ACC because Notre Dame is Notre Dame, and they're too proud. And we all know if they were ever going to join a conference, it'd be the Big Ten. But those bridges have mostly seemingly been burnt. But they're not going to accept the ACC, especially not when they're forced into it. So, but all that being said, that's part of all this equation. So on the flip side that I was trying to say is if you bring in some of these teams near the Big 12, get yourself to 12 or 14, get a title game back, which is part of this because – you know, I know Oklahoma got in last year, but we agree that's because they're Oklahoma.
Right.
Otherwise, the Big 12 was losing out these last years of the playoffs because they didn't have a title game. The committee people could say what they want, but clearly they take these title games into huge consideration, and the fact that the Big 12 doesn't have one has clearly burnt them the last 2 years. Again, even though Oklahoma got into the playoff last year, we all agree that that's mostly because, dude, they're Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, the flip like same side thing for Notre Dame against the 13th.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So the other side of this is if you're the Big 12 and you could restabilize yourself by getting a couple more teams, getting the title game back, preventing the other four conferences from eventually poaching you, which we all felt like was real darn close to happening a few years ago, then you could set up a scenario where as the playoff goes forward, because we all believe, myself definitely included, that one day this will be an eight-team playoff. If you solidify this with the Big 12, and note these teams, BYU, Independent, formerly of Mountain West, WAC, Cincy, Houston, Memphis, that's American, formerly Big East, and all three of them at one point, Conference USA, Colorado State, that's a Mountain West MAC team. In other words, you're going lower anyway. So they stabilize. It makes the mid-majors even weaker. It makes the separation between the Power Five and the mid-majors even stronger. And in a scenario down the road where they went, when, because to me it's still not if, it's when college expands it to an eight-team playoff, then it's simple. All five power conferences send their champ with three at-larges. That's plenty of space for a Notre Dame having a good year, as well as a second SEC team and another whoever. There's your 18 playoff. And if the Big 12 can do this, they can solidify that side of it. It makes how you break it down and who gets in much easier. So that's something to keep in mind down the road, even though I know there, it's still four right now. Deep down, we all know it's not if, it's when it becomes eight. So that's going to be a fascinating story over the next couple of months and years is where the Big 12 is going to go with this realignment expansion. And by the way, it's going to kick it off again below, because my favorite part of why this is such always a fascinating sports story for me that I loved getting into whenever it reared its ugly head. We all obviously, for understandable reasons, focus on the big boys, but there's domino effects that happened because of that. I mean, in many ways, all the realignment of a few years ago on both the football field and the basketball court has completely destroyed Conference USA. That was once a halfway decent conference in both sports. They are completely destroyed because of the domino moves. If you're taking multiple teams out of the American, who just this year is going to 12, or just last year when Navy came in, got to 12 in a title game, that means they're going to import somebody. And below them is going to import somebody. And the last leg below them is going to bring up one or two more schools. North Dakota State, I'm looking at you, up from 1AA. So I will then be fascinated to see who goes to the Big 12. And then down the line, how the other conferences react to try to keep some semblance of, hey, we're still Division One.
Right. And on the business side of things, too, like, I mean, you talk about Conference USA, how they got pretty well rated. Most of the American is now Conference USA alum. But
yeah, it actually is.
Yeah. Like, except for, like, what, two schools, like Temple and I think one other. But either way, like, Conference USA, they went to the table with ESPN because this is kind of the factor that's going to really hurt some of the mid-majors now, is that Conference USA got a lot less than they thought they would do with their next media agreement with ESPN. And
because ESPN knew how weak their conference was going to be.
That's why the ACC network thing baffles me, too, because they locked the ACC in for 20 years there, and it's like the television landscape is completely changing. We have more cord cutters than ever,
yep.
And these conferences aren't going to demand as much. So, like, you'll start to see more money, again, accumulate in who is power and who is not,
right.
Which, again, puts kind of the same reason that a lot of schools from FCS want to jump to FBS because of the money in bowls. A lot of schools, like, this is the last ship leaving for the power conferences.
That I absolutely agree with. No matter how this shakes out, if you're a Cincinnati, if you're a Memphis, if you're a Houston, if you're a BYU or Boise or whoever, this is probably it. There won't be any more trains leaving the station to get you up into power
for
after
this
20 one.
Years or so.
Because
yeah.
Restabilizing the Big 12, or at least preventing its getting sucked up by the other four, which is part of what this is. They clearly and understandably understand what happened last time. They don't want, and they were clearly the power conferences that was on the losing end of it last time. They can't afford to be that again, because again, it's weird to think of how logistically it would happen, but the numbers literally add up. If there's 10 Big 12 teams, that's enough for the other four to make themselves 16, eliminate the Big 12 completely, and then you really have two separate divisions in Division 1A or FBS, as it were.
Yeah,
and the Big 12 is trying to be like, no, we still want in on all this, and this is their chance to do it. But you're right. It marks that this would be the last chance for any mid-majors to make that jump.
And even if the Big 12 is getting excluded, I think, again, like Texas, they'll be fine. Oklahoma,
they'll be fine.
Everyone else, though, like...
they would have problems.
Yeah.
Maybe, ironically, Kansas, who's horrible at football, maybe the only other team not named Texas or Oklahoma
right,
that wouldn't
basketball.
Have much problem. Because to whoever they would go to, they could just say, hey, well, what about March time? We're Kansas.
Right, right.
We're a number one seed all the time.
Although
that doesn't have as much pull as football. But it will count for something that, say, Kansas State just doesn't have.
Granted, that argument hasn't helped UConn so far, but granted, they also don't have the vast history that Kansas has either.
Kansas has at least been a Division I football team, albeit horrible, all this time. UConn just became a Division I team
right.
circa 2000.
And also muddying this up is the fact that apparently, like, some of the Texas schools, like, I think TCU and Texas Tech, like, they feel like they have a gentleman's agreement that Texas will look out for them no matter what happens if this whole thing collapses.
Boy, that's misplaced.
But like, yeah, yeah.
If
like,
I ever
like,
heard.
Like, that's a gentleman's agreement.
You just have to go back.
You don't have any
just
guarantees.
Go back and rewatch Pony Excess, the 30 for 30. That was 30 years ago involving a school we haven't even mentioned to see what gentleman's agreement from the Texas schools
sure,
mean.
Absolutely. Yeah.
866-240-1065. It's a fascinating conversation. One of my favorite side subjects in sports, and it will continue to go on this Big 12 expansion. You got any thoughts on it? Give us a buzz at 866-240-1065. We got to take a quick time out, though. Get your check of traffic, local sports center update, check of the weather. I want to touch on these Browns and Lions projected lineups out from ESPN today, especially on the Lions side of things. Chris Lemieux does some great, outstanding work for PrideOfDetroit.com and SB Nation when he's not helping us here at the ticket. I want to get his thoughts and see if that's close enough for the Lions. And then if we have time this hour, but if not, we'll do it next hour. Some ways to improve baseball, but specifically something Commissioner Rob Manfred said. And you know what? Cue me up on this, if you would, Chris, because I'm going to tease this by playing it now. Even if we don't get to it next segment, I'll play it again for you before we're totally done at 6. Rob Manfred is thinking about limiting relievers? What's he talking about? Well, this is what he said to Mike and Mike this morning about it.
We spent a ton of time on this issue in the last few months. And, you know, the problem with relief pitchers is that they're so good. I got nothing against relief pitchers, but they do two things to the game. The pitching changes themselves slow the game down. And our relief pitchers have become so dominant at the back end that they actually rob action out of the end of the game, the last few innings of the game. So relief pitchers is a topic that is under active consideration. We're talking about that a lot internally.
And apparently what they're talking about internally is things like limiting how many relievers you can use is in a game or inning. Yeah, you heard me right. They're going to tell the Brad Ausmuses and Terry Francona's, sorry, you only got four relievers you can use today. Yeah, that's going to fly. But it's apparently out there, so we'll get thoughts on that as we go forward. But quick timeout here on this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Kusler and Chris Lemieux in for Bob France. We'll talk about all that and more straight ahead on this edition of the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5.
Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
And welcome back in. Final segment of this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. But yours truly, Jim Kusler, as well as Chris Lemieux, not going anywhere. We're in for Mike Miller on Drive Time coming up next hour. We'll talk with Stan Yee Jr. for our weekly ARCA Racing Series segment and go over some more of these topics as well. Wanted to get into some of the Browns and Lions projected lineups as thrown out there by ESPN.com. But before that, I see we have Mike in Woodville who wants to chime in on some of these baseball things we also brought up. What's going on, Mike? How you doing?
Hey, not too bad, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. What's on your mind?
Not too much. I actually listened to the Buster Olney and Mike Greenberg the first day they were on, and they had some crazy crazy things that actually they were suggesting.
Is this the ways to improve baseball, similar to the football one we did the other day, and they did the other day?
Yeah, the one that they did, Kevin Seifert or something, did it on ESPN.com.
That was it, yep.
So, I mean, the suggestions they had with the going to seven innings, you know, saying you couldn't bring a reliever to face just one batter, you know, letting the fans go down to the front rows after a certain inning. A lot of these sounded pretty cool.
Yeah,
so
let me read, if I may, Mike, real quick. Let me read a couple of them. Let's see. Reduce games to seven innings. Two scheduled single admission double headers for each team during the season. He calls this the Golic addendum, where you get various free concession items with each ticket. And some clubs already do that. I can actually attest. My family has season tickets to the Indians over there in Cleveland, and there is I forget what it's called off the top of my head, bad on me, but you get like $5 or $6 or $7 on the ticket that can be used, you know, essentially as discounts for when you buy concessions or something. So that idea has kind of already been out there. A two-tiered penalty system for PED offenses. Instructing managers to use the All-Star game to play their best players to win the game rather than focusing on getting everyone in. Three-man tag team pitchers to be used for home run derby. I kind of like this one. It reminds me of what they used to do at the old Cleveland stadium, the old mistake. Seventh inning stretch time. If you see seats down below that are unoccupied, you can go and sit in them. That absolutely should be done, by the way, in baseball. Like, I can't stand that. And of course, I remember as a kid at Cleveland Stadium, you could walk into the ballpark and sit wherever you doggone well, please. That, of course, doesn't exist anymore. And his last suggestion was like Jackie Robinson for what he represents to the Latino community in baseball, having everybody retire Roberto Clemente's number 21. Those are the nine from Buster Olney.
Yeah, and they also mentioned today about, like, Hall of Fame voting and some other, and I don't know if you actually heard it or not. I work third shift, so I ended up hearing my way home. But, you know, how they're talking about a slightly different subject about Jeff Gordon having to race for Dale Earnhardt Jr., how it's going to push back his Hall of Fame candidacy. And they're saying, well, why don't we allow somebody to go into the Hall of Fame right away, which leads into the Clemente thing, where Clemente was put in after he tragically died in 1972
right
from that plane crash.
Right, because in baseball, I forget the numbers in the other sports, but in baseball you have to be out of the game for 6 years before you're on the ballot.
Right. And with those things, I actually like a lot of the things that they mentioned itself, but a couple of them that were mentioned that didn't make the cut that I thought would be interesting to bring up here. And one of them was letting the home team decide whether or not you're going to utilize designated hitter.
Ooh, I really like that one. And, you know, I'm always biased on this topic in baseball, Mike, because I, you know, grew up in Cleveland, so American League City, same as Detroit, and it's still, to me, I'm totally still baffled as to why the National League continues to hold out and continues to have automatic strikeouts at the end of their lineup. It still baffles me as someone who grew up, was born and raised in an American League city. So that's an interesting idea. I like that one.
I actually love that one. I thought that would, it also had another layer of strategy for these managers that always talk about, you know, how their strategy is supposedly, you know, you're talking to the Brad Ausmuses, Terry Francona's. Each one has their own philosophy.
True.
It gives them an extra place to kind of go with that.
Yeah.
And it kind of limits somebody like David Ortiz. I mean, if you want to eliminate the designated hitter type of stigma for the Hall of Fame, well, that player is allowed to designate hit for 100 games their year, but they have to play in the field 40 games. The other team says, well, I'm not going to use the designated hitter because you have, you know, David Ortiz, Edgar Martinez, Frank Thomas, whoever.
Right.
That's truly dominant. Your designated hitter is, you know,
whoever.
The broken down Travis Hafner.
Right.
I mean, so you could utilize it. Say, oh, well, I'm going to pat my pitcher, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, and side note on the designated hitter part, because you just made it me pop into my head. And thanks for the call, Mike. Great call on that one. The thing that just popped into my head with the DH thing, because you're right, there still is that stigma in the Hall of Fame. You know, that's why Edgar Martinez never got anywhere near the amount of love that I thought he should be because he was a DH. Yeah, I think it's pretty safe to say, though, that David Ortiz is going to shatter that quote-unquote glass ceiling as far as DHs in the Hall of Fame, because I don't see how you keep David Ortiz out when it's all said and done, even though he spent almost his entire career as a designated hitter. He's barely played in the field in the last 10 years, but he's done so much that he has to be an Hall of Famer. If you throw out what position he played and look at his numbers and specifically his contributions to three world championship teams, guy has three rings, people. He's got to get in. The only reason a debate comes up is because you put the two little letters D and H back in the equation. So I think he'll break that quote-unquote glass ceiling for DHs when his time comes.
No one really talks about the little added help he got. No, like I am fascinated with this baseball that, like, some guys who get busted for PEDs are, like, just completely blackball, but then for other guys who just completely ignore it.
Because I think Dave Ortiz is one of the few guys that they're going to ignore it about.
Yeah,
I just
yeah,
do.
Madden,
I'm not
that
saying it's right, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Who was the Yankees guy who got ignored for? Was it Pineda? No, wait,
Pettit.
I don't.
You're thinking Andy Pettit.
Yes, I was thinking of Andy Pettit. Yes, like, we ignore it for those two guys just fine, but... You know, we'll continue to leave out Barry Bonds, who I like. I mean, that's absurd that one of the best baseball players ever, like, is just left out like that. But okay, we'll just ignore it for David Ortiz.
I'm not saying it's right, but I got a hunch that it's gonna get David Ortiz.
It's already been glossed over. It's
right, that's part of my point, I guess, right there. 866-240-1065. Got a couple minutes left, and I wanted to get into this, so we're gonna start with your Lions, by the way, Chris, because I know you as a writer for PrideofDetroit.com, Lions Side of SB Nation. ESPN, various writers have put out, because today is Thursday the 21st. We are 8 days away from training camp, at least for the Lions and Browns. Training camp opens next Friday the 29th.
I know, like, a lot of our Pride of Detroit guys, including myself, we're going to be up there not this Saturday, but, like, the Saturday after. So the 6th, we're going to all be there and being
point is,
weird,
it's coming.
Yes.
I know me personally, and yes, this is part of my Cleveland bias because I enjoyed the Cavs title run so much, and then that's over, and you look up and, oh my goodness, the Indians are actually first place, and the Browns stink so much, I've almost purposely been ignoring NFL actual on-the-field things. You know, we've had talks about the other various things that have come up, like those ways to change football and things like that. But here at ESPN.com with us, about 8, 9, 10 days, depending on what team you are, out from training camp starting. Here are the projected starting lineups, and ESPN made for all 32 teams. For the Lions, they have Amir Abdullah as one of the running backs, Golden Tate, Marvin Jones as receivers, Eric Ebron as the tight end. The offensive line from left tackle on down to right tackle is Taylor Decker, Lakin Tomlinson, Travis Swanson, Larry Warford, and Riley Reiff. On the defensive side, and of course, Matthew Stafford, a quarterback, of course. Defensive side, your defensive ends, Devin Taylor and Zeke. You have the D linemen, Haloti Ngata and A'shaun Robinson. Linebackers are projected to be DeAndre Levy, Tahir Whitehead, and Kyle Van Noy. And then in the secondary, Darius Sly. Glover Quinn, Raphael Bush, and Nevin Lawson. Incidentally, your long snapper, Jimmy Lands, Sam Martin punter, Matt Prater as your kicker. The floor is yours, Chris. Is there anything wrong with that projection?
Well, we at Pride of Detroit have a very soft spot for Don Mulpak, the current long snapper, and so I will have to just violently disagree with the long snapper pick of Jimmy Landis, even though the Lions drafted him in the sixth round, a long snapper drafted. But, you know, we have a soft spot for him. But at the same time, I think we all know the end is near.
He has been around for a while.
Let's see. Let's go through this. Travis Swanson, I see. And I like Mike Rothstein. We're kind of reading off his stuff. He's the Lions beat writer for ESPN.com. He points out correctly that for center Travis Swanson, he'll be pushed by Gabe Eckert and Graham Glasgow. But I see Glasgow's going to take over the job at some point. The only question is whether or not he starts the season as a center over Travis Swanson. But, like, yeah, that's your third-round pick. I don't think, like, you know, I think maybe there's a good chance he starts, but not a great chance he finishes the year at center. Lakin Tomlinson's an interesting one. I know it was the first-round pick, like, a couple of years ago, but...
Last year. This is his sophomore year, if you will.
Confused, yeah. But at the same time, like, from what I understand, just watching how they drafted this year, it just looked like Bob Quinn is just completely unimpressed by the idea of Lakin Tomlinson. And, like, look, this was a guy who is a little, like, you know, very, very technically minded, but not really a great size for the position, some might say. So, I don't know, like, you got Joe Dahl, another rookie behind him.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think Tomlinson will start there, but again, there's a lot of guys who it's like these guys could probably lose their jobs pretty quickly. We might even see it happen in preseason. The one who I don't think is going to start the year, though, is A'shaun Robinson here at defensive tackle. He says he's going to beat out Tyron Walker. They gave some pretty good money to Tyron Walker. I think A'shaun will get one of these spots probably at tackle. Especially as injuries pile up, you'll probably see an injury.
As they always do.
Yeah, especially, like, I know Haloti Ngata looks like he's in good shape, but, like, I don't remember the last time Haloti went through a whole season healthy.
So, that is true.
But Tyron Walker will have one of those defensive tackle spots. He's been good enough, and, yeah, he had that catastrophic injury, I think. My memory is pretty shot right now. I've been fighting a migraine all day, but, like, yeah, I think he'll have one of those defensive tackle spots.
We will have some time to talk more about this as we shift gears coming up to drive time. As yours truly, Jim Kushlin, in for Mike Miller. Chris Lemieux is going to hang out with us as well. We'll have the ARCA Racing Series guest as we do every Thursday, and that'll be Stan Yee Jr. because Flat Rock Speedway has their Stan Yee Memorial 150 coming up on Saturday. So we'll talk to him at about maybe 5:40. Or so. We're going to continue this conversation as we switch gears. I'll give you the Browns projected lineup coming up as there's a couple things there that I certainly have a few thoughts on as well. We continue to take calls also on the Big 12 expansion, on trade rumors and ways to improve Major League Baseball. And we'll play that clip for you of Ron Manfred from Mike and Mike again if we have some time about they're possibly thinking of changing some reliever rules up to and including how many you can actually use a game. That sounds DOA, but you never know. So stick around. We're going to take a quick time out for all that, and then we're going to switch gears to drive time next here on The Ticket.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.